This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. And John, no shortage of major topics this week here in Washington.
No, none at all.
And let's start with the one that's getting the most attention, at least over the past 5 or 6 days. It flared up again on Wednesday on Capitol Hill as Attorney General Eric Holder was testifying before the Senate Judiciary Committee. And that's, of course, his decision, as well as, I'm sure, the president's consent, that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and four other 9/11 alleged co-conspirators will stand trial in civilian court in New York City. I know just in the past couple of days, you've spoken with the man who was judge during the first World Trade Center bombing trial, Michael Mukasey, who was later Attorney General for the second President Bush. What did you learn from him?
Well, for one thing, as he has pointed out, the trial was already underway of these people who were enemy combatants, and the Supreme Court during World War II upheld the idea of special military tribunals in which to try them. Transferring them to a civilian court system, Judge Mukasey said, means starting all over again from the beginning. And as he pointed out, they're not going to escape from the Manhattan Corrections Center. It is a secure institution, but adherents of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, and I quote, now will have the opportunity for mischief in the form of murder. That's an exact quote from former Attorney General Mukasey. And as he put it, this raises the odds on that, and I would suggest to you it raises them very high.
Mischief for murder, who's going to be targeted?
Mischief in the form of murder. Well, it could well be witnesses, he said, and people who have confidential information that would be shared in the trial, and just the general public. But he said his adherents, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's adherents, are certainly there in New York. And yesterday I was at an on-the-phone news conference with former Mayor Giuliani, who seconded those sentiments and noted that in New York, everything, it seemed, is magnified 10 times because it's a business mecca as well as a media center. And in that case, it will send the word all around the world. He has called on the president to rethink the decision and have the 5 Guantanamo terrorists tried in the military tribunal as was meant to be. I might add one more thing. Judge Mukasey said that he has been to Guantanamo, and it is actually a much more pleasant and livable place than minimum security institutions in the United States, not maximum. But because Guantanamo has become a synonym for something horrible, such as torture, the administration felt compelled to shut it down. And that's where we are now.
John, you mentioned that the president has made a few comments that have suggested that this is a slam dunk conviction and execution as well. Those comments, of course, came during his trip to Asia, multiple stops, Japan, of course, where the bowing incident and potential controversy started.
Right.
China was really the heart of the trip. And then, of course, he spent a little bit of time in Korea and I believe Singapore as well. Your thoughts on the trip and what, if anything, was actually accomplished?
Well, as there was with his trip to Europe and to the G8 summit, President Obama generates interest and fascination everywhere he goes for very obvious reasons. Not since John Kennedy was president has there been an American chief of state who captivates the people around the world. Now, that said, one has to look at the substance of the meetings. Are relations with Japan and the new Hatoyama government any better? What are we going to do in terms of South Korea in helping President Lee Myung-bak tough it out with North Korea as well as China? And what concessions did he get from President Hu in Beijing and the Chinese leadership beyond a sharp lecture about deficits? He could have gotten that from the Republicans and didn't have to go to China for that, although, again, they certainly do own a lot of our own national debt, and they have every right to say it. Overall, I'd say it's like a lot of foreign trips. A lot of glitz, a lot of great photo opportunities, but in terms of substance, I don't see it.
John, one of the things we did in late October, early November, was get your predictions on key political races. So the Republicans obviously won the governorships in Virginia and New Jersey.
Yes.
And the one that seemed to go opposite of the way you predicted was the congressional race in New York's 23rd district. The Democrat won because the conservative candidate there, Doug Hoffman, conceded. He was sworn in, voted for the health care package and the whole deal. He's a member of Congress now. Now, as a result of some voting irregularities, and now Doug Hoffman claiming outright voter fraud by the likes of Organized Labor and Acorn, he's unconceding. The lead for Owens is at 3,000 votes with about 10,000 absentees to go. What's going to happen here?
Well, I predict the outcome will be about the same as it was election night. That 3,000 lead will hold up. Maybe it'll be slimmed a little bit and it'll get a haircut from the recount. But I don't see it changing, primarily because most of those absentee ballots were cast at the time Doug Hoffman was the Conservative Party nominee and Didi Scozzafava was the Republican nominee. So in order to finally overtake Bill Owens, he would have to get more than two-thirds of the absentee ballots in a three-candidate race. I just don't see the numbers on his side. As much as I would like to see him sworn in and a new vote on the health care bill, I don't think it will happen. And finally, as for my predictions, no, Doug Hoffman narrowly lost to Bill Owens, but I was right on Virginia and New Jersey. And as an old Yankees fan, I can tell you, batting 666 is good enough for the major leagues and maybe the Hall of Fame.
John, let's talk about another milestone in Washington this week. The longtime serving senator from West Virginia, Robert Byrd, already was the longest serving senator ever. Now he's served longer than anyone combined in House and Senate service. He was elected to Congress on the same ballot that elected Dwight Eisenhower president in 1952. Your thoughts on his longevity as he prepares also to turn 92 this week?
Yes, that's right. There's a lot of milestones for Robert Byrd, and chief among them is the longest serving member of Congress. If he were in the kind of health Strom Thurmond was in, he would be able to go maybe eight more years. I have vivid memories of interviewing Senator Thurmond when he ran for re-election at the age of 96, and he looked just fine. I still remember his grip on my arm. That said, Robert Byrd is in poor health, and one of the worst-kept secrets on Capitol Hill, even from former staffers, is the death watch they keep on the man they call the senator. It would be surprising if he made it to another term to run again in 2012, but it probably is not going to happen, and speculation is rampant about what happens when he goes. That said, Robert Byrd remains walking history, almost a man from another time, someone who is concerned about the rules, who has rarely ever missed any votes in the Senate, and comes from a time when people took their work seriously and wouldn't walk a mile for a camera.
Well, John, Harry Reid, the majority leader, certainly wants Robert Byrd healthy enough to be casting some votes in the very near future because he has unveiled his health care bill, and he needs 60 votes to get the debate started as well as to end the debate whenever that's going to be. We've seen a few details. It's over 2,000 pages, so we're just getting started in evaluating it. But what do you make of it so far?
Well, I'm going to have to read that when I get through the 1,100-page bill passed by the House by two votes that included public option. The fact is that he may well be able to get something passed, and then it will go to conference. And in all likelihood, public option won't survive, and the ban on abortion that was passed in the House will not see the light of day, either in the Senate or the conference version. With that said, I find it difficult, if not impossible, to believe there were a bill that both houses can vote on and agree upon that will get to the president's desk by New Year's Day. So I stand by what I said earlier. They're just so far away from the goal of a final health care bill, there will be no bill.
John, very quickly, do you believe that Harry Reid will use the reconciliation route, meaning he only needs a simple majority to pass this if it comes to that?
Well, to use a phrase of former President George H.W. Bush, whatever it takes. And the very fact that Massachusetts legislators changed the law in their state to permit appointment of a senator to fill Ted Kennedy's seat, that's Senator Paul Kirk, tells me this: he will do anything he can, including stretching the rules to the farthest degree to make the change. I say reconciliation, yes.
John, we'll keep watching. Thanks so much for being with us.
Always a pleasure until you start the questions. I'm John Gizzi on Capitol Hill.
John Gizzi is political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.